Hi, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm, let's see. Let's open the session with a quiet moment of silence and follow it by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
My name is Carol Cusack, and I'm an alcoholic. I live in Birmingham, Alabama. My home group is the Shelby County group in Montevallo, and look us up if you're ever in town. My sobriety date's November 24th, 1986. I got sober in Columbus, Ohio, stayed there about 3.5 years, and went to Michigan for a year, and I've lived here in Atlanta 2 years, and I've been in Alabama 7 years. So I have had some experience with having to take the program with me where I go, you know, and I haven't always found it in the meetings, you know, and I move to a different area and go to the closest meeting convenient, you know, and they're not saying what I need them to, what I need to hear, you know, big book and in recovery. And my sponsor would tell me, you need to search them out. You know, you need to search out those meetings that are talking recovery and progress. And so I've had to do that. I had my first sponsor for 9 years, my first 9 years sobriety. She passed away a couple years ago with cancer, and from what I told you, you can see that we didn't live in the same city. You know, I didn't drag her along with me, you know. And when I was 3.5 years sober and I moved away, I just knew I'd get another sponsor, you know. And I got up there to Michigan, and boy, nobody was just like her, you know. And I just wasn't happy. And she had me start writing her a little note every night before I went to sleep, and every 3 days I'd mail it. And just tell her if I prayed and read my book and went to a meeting and what new girls I'd met and things like this. And that worked for a period of time. And a year or so later, we were talking one night on the phone, and she said, you know, I started doing something, and I want you to start doing it. She said, I've started doing a written 10th step every night. And I don't know exactly when this happened, but I think I was around 6 years sober. She had me get a pad that was just for my 10th step and a pen there by my bed and my big book. And she had me to do a written 10th step at night, every night, and mail it every 3 days to her, you know. And that's how I got started being consistent on a 10th step. You know, if I wanted that sponsor that lived 12 hours away in a car, you know, then I needed to do what I needed to do to have that sponsor. You know, I didn't have to keep her. I could have went and got another sponsor, but I wanted that sponsor, you know, and I was willing to go to any lengths. And I have since had sponsees that actually just one that lived a distance away that did the same thing, you know, that mailed me her 10th steps. And it's an excellent way to keep current. What I do is I follow just exactly what the big book talks about, you know, continue to watch for. You know, it's like, man, I thought once I went through the steps, I'd be fine. You know, I wouldn't need to worry about, you know, inventories and all that kind of stuff, except occasionally when just drastic things happened, you know, then I'd have to do one. Well, I learned that I'm alcoholic and my mind is dramatic every day, you know, and even if I don't act on it, you know, I need to look at this stuff, you know, my thinking. I need to look at it on a daily basis. And she asked me to look, to watch for resentment, fear, dishonesty, and selfishness. And it says, when these crop up, we ask God to remove them at once. And then she had me do an inventory on paper. And to this day, you know, I like to say every night, you know, but I am human. You know, I do miss some. Now, since November, I've been doing better. I think it's because I knew I was going to be on this panel. So I can tell you, I've been doing it, you know, between 6 and 7 nights a week. I have been putting something on paper. You know, some of them are just little bitty things, and some of them are more. But I tell my sponsors, you know, at least you can get that pen and paper out and write God, where have I been? Resentful, fearful, selfish, and dishonest. And that's some of my best meditation when I'm laying there. You know, I lay in bed and do it. When I'm laying there and I'm contemplating my day and thinking over my day and trying to you know, see areas that needed improvement. And I do an inventory just like the fourth step. You know, I list resentful at, the cause, what it affects in me, and what's my wrong. You know, and that's exactly what I list. And it's just real simple. And then I use the paragraph in the big book on the tenth step, you know, ask some questions. And I ask myself, do I have a secret? Do I owe an apology? And then it says, did I do for others? And I can list some good things, you know, things that I did do for others. And then it says, was I kind and loving? You know, and I put, you know, where I was kind and loving, you know. Took the neighbor's trash can up their driveway without them knowing it, you know. Stupid stuff. And sometimes I do it just so I can put it in my tenth step, you know. But whatever works, you know. Whatever works. That's that sick alcoholic mind. I still want to get credit, you know, but... you know, shaking hands at my home group, taking cookies, you know, it's the little things, you know, going up to that person that looks scared to death and just telling them my name and asking them if they need anything and just sitting down next to them and maybe not even saying anything, you know, and just being kind. And then the last question I ask myself is, what could I do better? And there's always something I can put there, you know, there's always something I can put there. And I've been thinking a lot about I'm sponsoring a couple new people, and they're in the front of the book, and it's talking about, you know, this vital spiritual experience, and, you know, the appendix in the back that talks about change. It says change, 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 over and over and over. It says change, alteration, you know, change, and, you know, it's not a change at 1 year, and it's not a change at 2 years. For me, it's daily. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. You know, my biggest challenge right now and one of the hardest things I'm going through right now is that I have a one-year-old and trying to be patient with her, you know. And, you know, sometimes in my tenth step I can see, you know, it's like a double life. You know, sometimes the things I, you know, I just, you know, I can't take it anymore. And thank God I have that sponsor that I can tell those secrets to, you know, and I don't have to keep these things with me, because what happens if I keep things with me is they just get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I don't want to have to wait until I'm at the blowing point and then do a fourth and fifth step, you know. I'm just real grateful to have a way to keep current and keep the slate clean. You know, when it says promptly make amends, I have found... definitely it's easier for me the quicker I do it, you know, the quicker I go and make the amends and do what I know I need to do, no matter how it's going to affect me, the easier it is. You know, it's harder the longer I wait to correct things and to do the right thing. And you know, I'm really glad to be here. I kind of forgot to look at my watch. I don't know how many minutes I've been up here, but If you haven't tried the 10th step, I would highly recommend it. And, you know, I mean, I read some in the 12 and 12 and in the big book. And basically, you know, it's pretty much the center of my sobriety, because I believe the 10th step kind of covers steps 4 through 9. You know, it's sort of the center of the action that I take. And, you know, the speaker was... this afternoon was talking about activity and keeping real active, you know, and making coffee and running here and running there and doing this and doing that and doing that. And I can do that so much, and I do that. But if the action in the steps isn't there also, you know, a flat tire is going to take me out. You know, I'm going to call suicide prevention, you know, for that flat tire instead of AAA, you know, you know, in the 12 and 12, it talks about the emotional balance. And in the big book, it says the maintenance of our spiritual condition, you know. And so it's a good deal, and I'm just really glad to be here, and hope y'all are enjoying yourselves. And we'll have the next panelist.
I'm Kathy, I'm an alcoholic. And with the exception of having to stand up here right now, I can pretty much say that I'm comfortable within my own skin today. A few years ago, was at my grandmother's funeral. She died drunk. And my sister and I had the job of a speaking part in the service, and we made a pact afterward that we weren't going to have any speaking parts anymore. We were going to be pallbearers. We were big, strong girls. We could carry that cake. And, and so someone asked me to help with this, be on this panel, and or just help with the meeting in general. You know, and I thought, oh, good, I'll move chairs. I'll pull those walls out. I'll, you know, make coffee. I'm a big, strong girl. I can do something like that. And now I'm speaking. And when I got to this program, my sobriety date is in 1985, Halloween of 1985. And I got sober in Atlanta, and I've lived in Atlanta ever since. And I've never been to a meeting like this in my life. I've never been to a collection of women like this in my life. And it's just fabulous. You know, women kept me sober. Women got me sober. And it's really powerful. The common experience of our femininity is a whole different deal whenever there's no men here, except for the tape guy. I wonder how he felt. You know, when I got sober when I was in grad school, and I used to have these women's meetings. I did have smaller women's meetings in my house, and I had this male roommate, and we would be in the living room, and you couldn't get from the living room to the dining room without walking right through the living room, and there's like 30 women in there, and the pitch of the room is like, bah, 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 bah. You know how women are when they're together, they're high pitched, they're talking, and the poor guy ran through that room. I've never seen a man move faster to get away from all that. But back to coming back to this step, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. When I got to this program, I felt like a leper, and I felt like I looked like a leper, and everyone knew I was a leper. There were green, gooky things hanging off my body, and you all saw it, and everyone saw it. Everyone outside these rooms, everyone inside these rooms. And I don't think I went to a meeting for a year without crying. And a guy that I still know... When you hang around the same city for years and years of sobriety, people say amazing things to you because they watch you grow, you know, and I get to watch other people grow. He said, you know, you don't cry anymore, so we know you're doing better. And this step is about not feeling like a leper to me every day. I had like a picture-perfect childhood and everything was good and I learned right from wrong and people did not treat me poorly and as I drank and used, I didn't know right from wrong anymore and I didn't know anything, you know. And I know right from wrong today and I know when I feel uncomfortable in my own skin that I am wrong and I know when things go wrong that I have a part in it. And I may not be the wrong one. You know, that was a long... If I spent many years of spray, I'm wrong. I did it. It's my fault. Just lay it on me. Come yell at me. I am not always all the cause, you know, because the world does not center around me. But I have my part in it. When things go wrong, I have a piece. And standing up to that piece is really important to me. And when things go right, I didn't do it either. And that also is really important to me. I've had some really wonderful things happen to me while I've been sober. And, you know, I've had some children, and I have a fairly, you know, nice job, and I get accolades, and people say nice things to me all the time. But I didn't do it. You know, I didn't make me. And my children, I didn't make them. And our speaker just talked about, you know, God has a plan for my children that, you know, I got to show up and I got to bathe them and I got to make those stupid peanut butter sandwiches and volunteer at school and all that stuff. But how they turn out, I have no power over. And that's a very frightening thing. And getting up every day, going to work every day, I have no say in how it's going to turn out, except that I want my side of the street clean. And when I go to bed at night, I can sleep because I can say, you know, that really wasn't a good thing to say to this person, or maybe I could have handled that differently, or and to go back and fix it. And I will be the first to admit, I can think, because I've got I got told what steps I was back to, and I started thinking, oh gosh, I have never dealt with this thing. You know, there are things that I've put aside. But for the most part, you know, I get up that next day and fix what I screwed up the day before. And so I'm comfortable in my own skin. That desire, that secret longing that I thought everyone else in the world could have that was not ever going to be mine, is mine today. And I feel a connectedness to the universe and a sense of purpose. Sometimes that purpose is not what I want it to be, you know, and like I don't really like to talk in public. you know, but I had my first sponsor said to me, when someone asks you to do something in this program, you do it. And so I'm here. the other great thing about the 10th step, I think, at night, I'm a healthcare provider, and people talk to me all the time about their memory loss problems, and this is a very good memory device, because we have strong memories for the bad stuff and no memories for the good stuff. And as we get older, I am finding we have no memories for nothing. And so I tell people all the time, these people don't know anything about me. They don't know if I'm sober or what, you know, what's going on in my life. But I tell them, you know, you just go through at the end of the day. What happened? You know, think about what you wore. Think about what your friends wore. Can I start with clothes? That's like a girl thing. And it's less scary that way. But I think that if everyone did this, the world would be a better place. You know, part of my path in sobriety is to find a religious thing. And, you know, watching people outside these programs look for some kind of spiritual connection is amazing. You know, and I'm grateful that I didn't have to look too hard. You know, you get here because I'm here. I was here because I'm a leper. You know, please, God, take the green things off my body so that people aren't frightened to look at me so I can look in the mirror. And, you know, and I got this thing that now all these people that seem so normal and well put together are looking so hard to find. And sometimes I wish that some of my friends outside this program could have this program. But, you know, I wish they'd be alcoholics. There's a place. I have a place. And, you know, any city in America, any disaster that strikes me, I have a place. And I'm just glad to be home. Thanks.
Hi, my name's Lillian Svensson, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
I'm sober today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I have to say that this 10th step is the one step when I read in the 12 and 12, I always have to laugh. And, of course, I've got a bizarre sense of humor, or a sense of the ridiculous, I guess, because I really identify with so many of the things that it says in here. You know, and in the big book it said, by now, you know, after step 9, sanity will have returned. Is that so? I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, I have to do a lot of service in AA and a lot of different things in AA because I'm wacko. And if I don't do those things, you know, I deteriorate rather rapidly. So, I should say, I live in California now. I got sober in Australia in June of 1964. And I was 20 years old, and I knew everything. And I guess my memory's deteriorated since then. I don't remember most of it, so that's a good thing. Anyway, this step 10 makes me think of us coming to a point where we say, okay, we're all adults here, you know, let's get to it. You know, where it says we find that other people are emotionally sick and frequently wrong, just like us, you know, and the love and tolerance is our code, and things like that, that adults behave that way. You know, which was never my strong suit. I never desired to be an adult particularly. Of course, I didn't really know what one was, but it seems to have happened in spite of me, you know. And last night I was reading this stuff because I thought, well, you know, I should be an adult and prepare myself for this, you know, even though I'm a big believer in spontaneity. And the thing I was reading, you know, I'm staying with a friend of mine out at another friend's place in Marietta, and I said, listen to this, and I'm cracking up. She says, well, you really think this is funny, don't you? And it says, our first objective will be the development of self-restraint. Well, when I was 20 years old, let me tell you, that was meaningless to me, you know. And the only reason I didn't drink is because it was removed. It had nothing to do with me. And the reason I didn't have resentments is because they were removed. Because whoever it is in charge of this whole thing said, that girl is not going to stay sober if she's resentful like that. So we'll get rid of those too. That was a big blessing to me, let me tell you, because I had what I used to call those cancerous resentments. You know, I could think of something suddenly that happened 5 years before, work myself into a state and not be able to speak for 3 days. You know, now how would a person stay sober in that condition? So anyway, I was blessed, actually, with the removal of those. But, you know, there's so many things that I find that the longer I'm sober, the more attentive I have to be to this whole thing. Because I guess, you know, it's like when you're a kid, you know, and you jump off a roof or you do whatever you do. And, it, you know, you don't care. You're immortal. It doesn't matter. And, you know, when I was newly sober, I was so smart and I knew everything and I didn't listen to anybody and blah, blah, blah. You know, I didn't really value what I had as much as I do today. You know, and I'm very active in the program. I go to a lot of meetings. I sponsor a lot of women. I'm involved in general service. I'm involved in this, that, and the other thing. But I also, you know, I also go to the opera. I also belong to all these genealogy groups. And I'm, you know, I've got my hobbies. I got 3 dogs and 2 cats. I have a busy life, you know. So I don't spend all my time waiting for an active alcoholic to show up that I can, you know, look after or help or whatever. But whether I wait for them or not, they show up, which is a good thing. You know, because without them, I would not stay sober. I really see the value in, you know, new people. Because a group, my home group is Broadway Winners in San Pablo on a Sunday night, and there's 5 or 6 of us now that attend that group. For some reason, something has happened. And there's not a person, I think, not a person under 10 years sober there. And I think about 3 of them are 20 years, and then I'm over 30. We say, where the hell are the new people? We've got to go out and grab them up here, or we're going to have to close the group. It's deader than a doornail, you know, with the old farts sitting around talking. You know, that's not how it works. So, there are those old farts who think that's how it works, but anyway, there's a number of things I find. I don't do a written 10th step at night. Every now and then I do when things have become a little more bizarre than usual. But during the course of the day, you know, there are a number of things that I've learned to look for. And when I find that I'm being critical of you particularly, I have to stop. You know, I've learned now, and I do it quite quickly, actually. Now, what is it that I'm doing I shouldn't be doing, or what is it I haven't done that I should be doing? Because as long as I can deflect it from me to you, you know, then I don't have to look at that. But I'm not comfortable. See, I'm not comfortable now doing that kind of thing. You know, when it was all your fault, it was a big problem for me because I couldn't do anything about it. But when it's my fault, I can do something about it. That's where the power lies. So I use that for, you know, to stop myself from that discomfort of, you know, looking at other people and their sins of omission and commission. And the other thing I find, too, is, I didn't identify with this, but I listened to this one guy that has been spoken about a few times this weekend. I listen to his tapes a lot. And his case, you know, talks about your case being different. You know, and when I'm at work, for example, and I start thinking, well, you know, they're all in that office, and how come I'm not in there with them talking? Are they going to call me in soon? What have I done? So I know now this has nothing to do with reality. I'm usually too tired. I'm seldom hungry, I must admit. You can tell I am seldom hungry. One of my friend that I'm here with, I said, isn't it too bad in the old days I could get so upset and not eat and lose weight? And nothing upsets me that much anymore. Anyway. So those feelings of being, you know, tired, like halt, how often do we hear? I don't hear that at meetings much anymore. I don't know about you guys. I don't hear it. You know, hungry, angry, lonely, and tired. And when I start feeling like that, then my case is different. And then they're all there doing something without me. I'm left out, you know, and all of that stuff. So you'd think I'm 35 years sober. I should be over this. Well, I'm not over it. Oh, well, you know, I'm over it right now, right this minute. But tomorrow is another day, you know. And this evening is another evening. So these are things that I learned to, you know, that I try to look for, you know, when I know the signs and I know what to do in the course of a day, you know, to keep myself balanced, you know. And of course I have a power greater than myself. You know, I came to believe, I came to know, you know, God to me, whatever that is, you know, is the most powerful force in the universe and has transformed my life totally. That's really the way it is. And of course, with that, you know, and learning these tools, I can live my life, you know, well. I can be pretty well balanced under all conditions. You know, people look at me and say, well, you don't seem very upset about that. Well, I'm not very upset about that. And I can't work it up. I'm sorry. You know, there's also an advantage to getting older. There's less energy for that stuff, you know. If I want drama now, I buy tickets and go to the theater. So. But one thing that came to my attention recently, and you might wonder why I took so many. I used to tell myself stories, for example, that things were good when they weren't good. This is in terms of, you know, being in love or lust or whatever you want to call it, or being in a job that wasn't right, you know, and I would make it right, you know. I would tell myself all the stories appropriate to, you know, build that up to be correct. And I thought, well, I was sort of done with the stories, but it turns out I have other stories I've just discovered, and those are to do with procrastination. Now, I find it's quite interesting. I have something I'm supposed to do at a certain time, and I hear the story starts. I think, well, what is this now? I'm making it right that I don't do it now. That there's a way I can do it next week, next month, when I really know the truth of the matter, if I'm being honest with myself, is I need to do that now. I need to do it when I said I was going to do it. Whether I said it to another human being or just to myself, doesn't matter. I need to do it. And I need not to tell myself these stories. So this is another aspect of the 10th step for me. Because the minute I hesitate, you know, and start the stories, then I say, just shut up and go do it. I talk to myself quite a bit, you know, but that's really, you know, that's really what it's about to me. I want to be comfortable. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. I would be much happier and much more joyous at this moment if I weren't so tired. But I am actually, I do feel that way. I feel that I have been given the greatest gift in the world, you know, which is my sobriety. And I'm willing to do anything that I have to do today, as I was at the beginning. They said at my first meeting, you can leave this room and you need never drink again. You know, and I believed it. And I still believe it. And I know that, you know, I don't want to just be not drinking. I want to have a life that's content, where I, because if I'm content and I feel pretty good, then I can stop thinking about me and I have something to give to somebody else, which is to me the point of this whole business. And the 10th step helps me with that. It helps me keep the trash cleared out, you know, and I can live to good purpose. And I can also share that with other people. You know, you have a problem with procrastination, you have a problem with this, that, the other thing. Well, this is what I've done about it. I don't know that you should do that, but this is what I've done about it. And so that's, you know, to me the value of this ongoing, you know, inventory and checking myself, checking, you know, identifying almost right away now, you know, what it is. Because I recognize them. It's the same old theme all the time. There's nothing new, I have to say. And but I still learn, you know, I'm learning all the time. This gal at a women's day I went to recently, maybe some of you have heard this, I'd never heard it before. She said, you know, when you look at the book, somebody said there's ants in the bindings, you know, and they rush out and form different words on the pages. You know, even after 35 years, they've changed stuff in this book. You know, I never saw that before. So that's what's so exciting about it. It's a spiritual way of life. You know, there's no end to it. And there's no end to the joy that you can find here. Thank you very much for my sobriety.
Good afternoon, ladies. My name is Shirley Coons, and I am an alcoholic.
Hi.
Well, I'm the alternate to the alternate. And I'm here participating in my own sobriety because I'm the baby member of this panel. My sobriety date is June 21st, 1997. And I thought I was supposed to be across the hall. I suited up. I'm in a dress, so I'm going to any length to stay sober today because this is not my usual attire. The difficulty for me on the 10th step, I guess, is promptly, because, and that's the essence of the 10th step, it seems to me. But I do begin and end my day as it suggests in the big book, and more will be revealed. I'm certainly not well yet, and I am learning to admit when I'm wrong. It might have been better if I'd admitted that I wasn't ready to speak today. But I'm kind of a fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants kind of girl. I've had a long history with Alcoholics Anonymous, though. The first time I heard of AA was in 1963 at 12. And fortunately, for my sake, I knew where to go when I needed help. I also went through the back doors of AA into Al-Anon in 1976. Shortly thereafter, I was in an AA meeting. And in 1982, I got sober for 7 years. So I guess the 10th step separates the men from the boys. This is our maintenance steps, and we have to continue to maintain our sobriety, so we have the daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spirituality. So somewhere along the line, I want to say I had no mental defense against the first drink, and it was because I was not doing what I was supposed to be doing. And so I too, when someone asked me to do a position or to do some service work, I will try to the best of my ability to fulfill that, even if I'm not quite ready. So, I thank you for your patience with me today, and I'm really glad to be here. I have to tell you another thing that happened to me. I was at a women's retreat this summer in Carson City, Nevada, and I bought $5 worth of raffle tickets because I thought that's what I could afford. And lo and behold, I won the trip to Atlanta for the International Women's Conference. God has a plan for me. Thank you.